This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When you think about it, history is full of people who say they heard voices. Muhammad, Moses, Abraham, Joan of Arc. They all claim to hear the voice of God. Socrates, William Blake, John Milton also claimed they were haunted by voices in their heads.
These are the kind of names that invite us to romanticize the idea of hearing voices.
But today, to say you hear voices invites something entirely different. A diagnosis of mental illness.
Well, there is a new movement that's vigorously pushing back against the notion that those who hear voices are sick. It's called the Hearing Voices Network, and it began in the United Kingdom, but it has come to the United States, and one of the first American chapters was founded right here in Massachusetts.
The growth of the Hearing Voices Network raises many important questions.
Such as, what is a mental illness versus what is not?
What is objective reality versus what is not?
What is simply normal and human versus what is not?
And what are the consequences, positive and negative, when people who hear voices step away from traditional psychiatric care?
We're going to search for the answers today to all these questions with the founder of the Massachusetts Hearing Voices Network and with a psychiatrist from McLean Hospital in Belmont. But first, we'll begin with someone who hears voices. Her name is Lisa Forstall, and she joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Lisa, I understand that you are the interim assistant director at the Western Massachusetts Recovery Learning Community. Western Massachusetts Recovering Learning Community, and you're also a facilitator within the Hearing Voices Network, so I want to get a little bit later about how that's helped you, but can you describe to me who or what you hear in your head?
Well, as a child, I was told they were my playmates, and that's how everybody explained it to me. And as I've grown up, I've learned to interpret them a bit differently, but they're still companions, both for good and ill sometimes, it seems.
Can you tell me a little bit more about them? You started hearing them, I understand, when you were 3 or 4. And, do they take on distinct personalities? Who are they?
They're three companions. All of them were children when I first started hearing them, two females and a male. And the male grew up and is now my age, and I'm in my 40s. And the girl stayed young, and they still hang out with me. They're all very distinct and different people. Mm.
And you said that they can be good companions most or some of the time, at least. So what are the kinds of things that they say?
Well, it depends on the situation. When I'm stressed out, they tend to be a little more vocal. And if I'm holding my own, they're supportive. And if I'm not necessarily being true to myself, they're usually giving me a hard time.
Mm. You sound fairly at ease with the voices at this point in time talking to us, but apparently it hasn't always been this way. I mean, when did it change for you that maybe you were a little concerned?
Well, I think all the time when I was a kid, they were absolutely my companions. Kids can be harsh and whatever, but they were friends when I was pretty lonely. I was a Navy brat and I got bounced around, and so making connections with other children was difficult. So they really, really did hang close to me. And then when I started school, the humans around me told me that the voices inside were not cool, and that's when I began to suppress them because nobody wanted to hear about them. Mm. So that just led to them kind of stressing that I would get in trouble if I talked more about them, and so they're incurred like an internal battle about whether or not I was going to talk outwardly about my voices. And I think again they were protecting me because I would end up really with a real quick diagnosis and go through all of that when really I'm among the 2/3 of individuals who hear voices that cope pretty well without any sort of intervention.
So you have been in the hospital, I gather.
I have, for reasons other than my voices.
Okay. You said that you have been diagnosed, within the mental healthcare system?
Yep, I have several diagnoses. It's one of the reasons, it's the main reason, other than my community development background, that I'm involved with the recovery learning community.
Okay. And let me ask you, do you... think that there's any particular reason why you hear these voices?
I think those of us that hear voices all come up with their own interpretation, and it's really important to respect whatever that is. So if Muhammad hears God, that's valid for Muhammad. In my case, I feel as though it's my brain's capacity to help me cope with my environment. And so it gave me friends, and it gave me a conscience that is a crass, nasty fellow sometimes. And it's just really helped me, keep an eye on my world.
Lisa, let me ask you, have you ever been on medication for these voices?
I have been on pretty much every psychotropic medication that a psychiatrist has been able to prescribe. Part of that has been for psychoses, but I have never reported voices to a psychiatrist.
You've never? Why?
Never.
Why?
Because you learn pretty quickly that not to talk about it in the mental health world, because not all of us want to get rid of our voices, and that's assumed. It's also assumed that it's a delusional process, and that's degrading.
So does that mean, Lisa, that would you agree if a psychiatrist told you that you have a mental illness?
No, I actually, through the years have questioned the other diagnoses as well.
So you don't think that hearing voices is, as traditional psychiatry would state, a sign of a mental illness?
I absolutely do not think that hearing voices is a sign of a mental illness. Mm.
So how did you find the Hearing Voices Network, and how has it helped you in ways that you didn't find the traditional psychiatric establishment helped you?
Well, the Hearing Voices Network kind of came to us, and you're going to speak with Gail in a couple minutes, but she really was pivotal in bringing the Hearing Voices Network to the United States over the years. And it's just a wonderful group experience where there is no prejudgment of illness or otherwise, that your understanding of your voices is your understanding, and it's completely valid. And to be able to talk to somebody that shares an experience similar to your own, especially one that you have kept closeted for the better part of your life, is something that really just can't be described in a very short interview. It's very supportive and kind of cleansing and comforting.
So, Lisa, let me ask you, did the voices that you have heard and continue to hear, did they ever tell you or encourage you to harm yourself or others?
They have, and I guess that's always the fun part that the psychiatric world likes to talk about is directive voices. And they can really be strong and encourage you in ways that you may not want to go. And that said, the individual always has the final choice. So supporting somebody who hears voices that are instructing them one way or the other is so important, because it is still up to us. And that's the question, is not whether or not you hear them, but whether or not you can say no to them.
Lisa Forstall is Interim Assistant Director at the Western Massachusetts Recovering Learning Community. She is also a facilitator at the Hearing Voices Network. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, listeners, that is a firsthand account of the Hearing Voices Network and how it deals with or helps with people who hear voices in their head. So what do you make of it? Hearing Voices claims that people who hear them are not sick, that they're just human, and that talking about it, being in a supportive environment with fellow people who hear voices, is a more humane treatment than is traditionally available in the mental health community. So give us a call if you have any thoughts about this. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to introduce now two people into the conversation. Gail Hornstein is a professor of psychology at Mount Holyoke College, and she is the co-founder of one of the first Hearing Voices groups here in the United States. It was founded in Holyoke. Gail Hornstein, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much.
Also with us is Dr. Dost Unger. He is a clinical director of psychotic disorders, or the psychotic disorders division at McLean Hospital. And he's an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Welcome to you, Dr. Unger.
Thanks for having me.
So Gail Hornstein, we heard Lisa Forstall tell us exactly, you know, what her personal experience is and why she feels Hearing Voices Network is so important. Let me just first ask you if you could briefly tell us, this is a program that got started in the United Kingdom. What first drew you to it? And why did you want to found a chapter here in Massachusetts?
Well, the Hearing Voices Network is an international movement of thousands of people who hear voices, mental health professionals, family members of people who hear voices all over the world. There are networks in 20 different countries around the world. And the United Kingdom is the place where this network has developed to the greatest extent over the past 20 years. This movement has been going on for quite some time. There's a tremendous amount of psychological research that supports its claims, and it's only just coming to the United States. Mm. This is a very exciting moment for the United States, but we are quite a bit lagging behind this kind of development that's going on in the rest of the world.
So what is it that actually happens in a Hearing Voices meeting that is different than what might happen under traditional psychiatric care?
Well, the Hearing Voices Network, first of all, has several aspects. It has the research aspect, which has provided a very robust, evidence-based approach to understanding the complex experience that is hearing voices, seeing visions, having other kinds of unusual or extreme psychological experiences. And peer support groups, which now exist by the hundreds all over the world, are one aspect of how this research has been applied to be helpful to people.
Mm. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I do want to point out that our attention was brought to what Hearing Voices is doing through a wonderful article in the Boston Phoenix by S.I. Rosenbaum. And there's an example of an interaction in one of the support groups that is featured in
the
article.
Yes, that's my group. Yes.
Where, for example, it says that, say, a guy comes in trembling with adrenaline, telling the group that his house has been staked out. He hears people talking about him on the telephone. He knows he's being targeted because of his secret job within the CIA. And in the article, it says, you know, instead of questioning the validity of his claims, one of the fellow Hearing Voices participants actually asked this person, "Does the CIA give you any vacation time?" So is it that sort of peer-to-peer support that Hearing Voices does differently than elsewhere?
It's certainly peer-to-peer support, but the most important part of the Hearing Voices Network is that it provides an alternative framework for understanding what voices are, for understanding why they occur in people's minds, and what people can do to help themselves to cope with this kind of very, very distressing experience. Because although HVN wouldn't say that voices are necessarily pathological, it's certainly the case that many, many people who hear voices are deeply distressed by them and want help in understanding them and in coping with them. And that's one of the most important parts of the network, because when I did you asked me what led me to this, mm-hmm. and I was doing research for the book that I subsequently published on this topic, which is called Agnes's Jacket. And Agnes's Jacket focuses on the development of this network around the world, and my astonishment as a professor of psychology in finding out that the approach that I and all other psychologists and psychiatrists had learned in our professional training to think of voices as necessarily pathological, as something people wanted to get rid of, that only getting rid of them or blocking them with medication would be helpful, that whole way of thinking wasn't necessarily helpful to people, and that an alternative approach in which people are encouraged to understand the meaning of their voices and then to develop practical strategies that HVN has pioneered over 20 years to cope better with their voices is an approach that leads to considerably more change.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Dost Unger, you hear what Gail Hornstein is saying. What do you make of this sort of burgeoning movement that basically, at its core, challenges the notion that there's any physiological reason or factor behind mental illness, and that medication, you know, isn't what they believe should be the way to deal with it?
Well, I think there are a lot of complex issues. I think Dr. Hornstein highlighted some of those complexities very well, that Hearing voices is not uncommon in the general population. There are some population surveys suggesting as much as 5% of people who don't have a psychiatric diagnosis may have experienced it. Not all voices are derogatory or persecutory. Many people can live with their voices as part of their lives, and they're perfectly well adjusted. And really, in general, I welcome a movement where people share their experiences and through that sharing find a source of strength and coping.
Dr. Unger, let me just press you a little bit on that and ask you, what do you make of the fact that really at the bottom of this there seems to be this a profound questioning that people who hear voices are even ill at all?
Sure. So I think that's really where I think the most interesting debate is. And in general, in psychiatry, I think, you know, a few of the comments that were made, I think, in your introduction aren't necessarily fully accurate, that hearing a voice is the same thing as a mental illness or there's an automatic diagnosis. However, many people who hear voices, as Dr. Ornstein was saying too, suffer. And psychiatry comes in when they're suffering, and the goal is to alleviate that suffering. We don't know what causes people to hear voices, and we don't know what causes the auditory hallucination symptom when somebody has a psychotic illness and they're hearing these voices. What we do know is that it's very difficult to live with them, especially when the voices are persecutory or command. They're associated with risk of suicide, risk of violence. Many people living with these problems suffer day to day. So really the goal is to alleviate the suffering. If that comes through the voices ending, that's welcome. Sometimes, as Dr. Ornstein is saying, it can come through finding a new balance or finding coping mechanisms.
Let me just also say,
there is very good evidence that the medications that are used to treat psychotic illnesses can actually dampen or eliminate these voices significantly. So, I see all of these things as complementary to one another. If somebody benefits from medications, great. If somebody benefits from the Hearing Voices Network, that's fine too.
Dr. Gayla Hornstein, you hear Dr. Unger taking kind of maybe a very holistic approach to all manner of treatment, but there are lots of psychiatrists out there who look at hearing voices. I mean, again, in the Phoenix article, one was quoted as saying, we spend an awful lot of time trying to, first of all, just persuade people to have treatment, and then to have a group like Hearing Voices come in and say, actually, you're not ill. It's not very helpful at all for those people who are trying to get treatment to people who may need it.
Well, I would really challenge the idea that we should talk about this in terms of illness or not illness. I appreciate Dr. Ongar's way of looking at this because I, too, would take a holistic perspective. The thing that I found when I began the research for Agnes's Jacket, one of the things I found most stimulating and inspiring about the Hearing Voices Network was that it did not take a dogmatic approach toward understanding this kind of experience. Indeed, it took the approach that said, just as Dr. Ongar just said, we don't understand why it is that people have this kind of experience. And when it's very distressing for them, the goal is to help the person feel less distressed. If people find medication helpful, the Hearing Voices Network supports that. If people find being in a peer support group helpful, the Hearing Voices Network supports that. People have all kinds of different explanations, as Lisa Forrestal said, for what their voices are doing in their lives, if they're coming as a source of trauma, if they're coming as a source of companionship, if they're coming as a consequence of some kind of physical illness, if they're coming as a result of drug intoxication. There are many reasons why people hear voices, and the Hearing Voices Network takes an agnostic, open-minded approach towards saying whatever is helpful to the person is most important, and really does not take this kind of doctrinaire attitude that says there is no such thing as mental illness or any of these kinds of claims. And indeed, in most Hearing Voices peer support groups that I've been part of, many people in those groups do take psychiatric medications. It's just that those medications alone are not sufficient to help them, and they need a positive, appropriate coping strategies to be able to live their lives in a daily way.
Let me get a call in here. Patricia is calling from Westwood. You're on the air, Patricia.
Hi. I'm calling because I've been close to this illness myself in terms of my mother was schizophrenic. And it's very interesting to hear that today there is this organization who is supporting the people who hear voices, giving the confirmation that this is their reality. I used to do this with my mother because I knew this was her reality. At the same time, for her, it was very extremely distressing and was a severe disruption to a quality of life, and she severely needed medication. This was decades ago, and the medications were not great at that time. So it's a precarious balance, and I'm just offering this experience of my own where I've seen severely ill people, but they need medication at the same time. They need confirmation that what they experience is their reality.
I see. Patricia,
I just say that I think this is so important because this is exactly what Hearing Voices peer supports do, is make people feel that what is going on in their own minds is in fact occurring to them.
Mm. Well, I guess that sort of gets us to what I find to be a really fundamental impasse that the world of psychiatry and mental health finds itself at. And that is, you know, it's traditionally believed that in order to begin to get treatment, especially if you're going down the road of medication, you have to acknowledge the illness to begin with. And I'm reading that up to 50% of people who have been told they have a mental illness refuse to acknowledge it anyway. So, I mean, is that the reason why a program like Hearing Voices, Dr. Unger, you feel is given, that's the space that they're driving into and that they actually can serve a purpose there?
Yes, I think so. But I think you're highlighting kind of the danger as well, and the psychiatrist quoted in the article too. Because saying, you know, some people who hear voices are fine and they've found a very good way to cope with that and psychiatrists shouldn't stick their noses into that isn't the same thing as saying that this is all a big misunderstanding and these people don't have a mental illness and so on. Some do, some don't, as Dr. Ornstein said too. The difficult debate about who has what kind of illness and how should we be helpful to them really plays out every day in psychiatric clinics. And this is a common clinical reality. Many of the people we serve don't acknowledge that they're suffering, even though there is great suffering. And the psychiatrist's job is really to reach that person and find the common language that can get the person to address the suffering finally so that they can get some effective help. And oftentimes the medications are helpful, and you know, oftentimes part of the treatment plan needs to include self-help groups. It needs to include rehabilitation. It needs to include peer support. These are all things that work together, to provide healthy lives for people.
Gail, we've got running down in time. I only got a couple minutes left, and I just wanted to ask Gail Hornstein briefly. You started the Massachusetts chapter of Hearing Voices. Can you tell us briefly about how it's spreading across the United States? Because I know that you said that it's quite prominent in many European countries and only now getting a foothold here.
Yes, that's exactly right. In Britain right now, a country of 60 million people, there are 180 peer support groups for people who hear voices and have other similar experiences around England. In the United States, a country of more than 300 million people, there are less than 10 such groups. So we really have a long way to go. We have been training people. Our first group started in Holyoke, Massachusetts. We have, over the past year, trained a number of facilitators of these groups around New England, and a number of people, having been trained, are now able to facilitate new groups, and we're starting new groups all the time. And we have just launched a website for people who are more interested in learning more about this. That's hearingvoicesusa.org, hearingvoicesusa.org. And the international organization that is part of the overall framework for the Hearing Voices Network is at intervoiceonline.org.
Well, we'll have those links on our website at radioboston.org. Gail Hornstein, professor of psychology at Mount Holyoke College and co-founder of one of the first Hearing Voices groups located here in Massachusetts. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for this program.
And Dr. Dost Unger, thank you so much for joining us as well. He's clinical director of psychotic disorders divisions at McLean Hospital and assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Unger, thank you once again.
Thanks for having me.
Well, up next, Chicago-born jazz vocalist Kurt Elling joins up with a Danish big band for a performance in Boston this week. We'll hear from him next. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.